Now, the forecast from the National Weather Service, scattered showers slowly moving through the listening area this morning. Breezy, a high of 56. Cloudy tonight, a low around 40. A chance of showers returns tomorrow morning. Otherwise, it'll be a cloudy Saturday with a high around 47. Clear tomorrow night, a low of 36. Then for Sunday, sunshine returns, but temperatures will stay basically the same. The expanded forecast, dry Monday through Thursday with highs generally in the 50s. Right now, we've got cloudy skies, some light rain showers appearing to move into the western reaches of the WGTD listening area. At least that's according to radar. And we have a temperature reading of 48. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show with Greg Berg is coming up.
And we welcome you to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And I'm trying to pull up the sound of this choir that is singing for the Fine Arts at First Series, and I'm going to work on that and see if we can bring that on. But in the meantime, rather than dead air, let's hear the melodious voice of Jessica DeBoer, who is coordinator of Fine Arts at First. And in a very busy Friday morning show, Jessica is going to be telling us about all kinds of wonderful things that are part of this new season. After we're done with talking with Jessica, we're going to preview for you Lombardi at the Racine Theater Guild. And after that, we'll recap two productions that have already opened at Parkside and at Lakeside Players. So busy, busy, busy. But to get things started, Jessica DeBoer, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Thank you so much.
Good to have you here. And as always, it looks like you have managed to put together a really stunning season. Before we talk specifically about this lovely vocal group from Estonia that is performing on Sunday afternoon to kick off the season, maybe you could say a word generally about how these seasons get put together and what is that process like?
Sure. You know, I start working on it probably in, well, I'm already talking to people for next season, but sometimes I get people that just reach out to me, which is the case with Heine Vonker. Their tour manager reached out and said, can we come, can we come? But other times, you know, we have people that get recommended to me by either David Skripsema or other fine arts people in the community. And sometimes we just have wonderful people that live close by that we would love to have on our series. So I try to make a good mix of new groups and familiar faces every year. So I think this year is a good example of that.
Very much so, very much so. So in terms of the history of Fine Arts at First, give us a sense of just how far-reaching and wide-ranging the offerings have been.
Oh, gosh. This is our 14th season, And we have had groups from all over the world. We've had early music groups. We've had modern music groups. We have soloists. We have chamber ensembles. We just have a little bit of everything, and we just try to do that, not only, you know, across the board, but every season, just have a good representation of different musics from all over. And so, we have groups from, we have performers from our backyard this year and a group from Estonia. So
don't get much more far ranging than
that. No, I bet people don't even know where Estonia is.
Right. And what is your primary array of responsibilities as the coordinator of all this? What does that mean besides making kind of the ultimate choice about who is part of the series?
Sure. I do put together the series, but that also means that I have to communicate with the groups and get their programs from them. I work very closely with our graphics guy at our church. His name is Shimon Croxton, and he does a fantastic job of designing the print works for us, and then I also have to run around town and hang up all those posters that you see in the coffee shops and in, you know, in restaurants. That's part of my job too. So a little bit of everything. I also work with wonderful people at the church who do jobs for me. I have a woman who coordinates all of the ushering. I have another lady who does all of the receptions after the programs. She coordinates those, and so we just, you know, it takes a team for sure.
Wow. Fantastic. Well, let's talk about the season as a whole, and we certainly want to talk in particular about the vocal group that's going to be part of the proceedings this Sunday afternoon.
Yes.
At 3:00. So, and this is the group that happens to hail all the way from far off Estonia.
Yes, yes. Their tour manager started reaching out to me a long time ago and said, "We're coming to the U.S. We would, you know, I see that you have this concert series, and we're going to be in Milwaukee on Saturday, so could we perform on your series on October 21st, 2018? And I said, "Well, I think that would be lovely, but, you know, it's really hard to explain to somebody from far off Estonia about American football and schedules." And so I'm trying to explain to him about, you know, the Packers, the Green Bay Packers, and if they have a game during your concert, no one will come to your concert, and won't that be sad? And you don't want to come all the way from Estonia and have nobody in the audience. So, I told him I'd have to get back to him, and magically, it's the bye week for the Packers, so it was perfect. It worked out perfectly. So it was meant to be.
Right. So explain to our listeners what this group is about. I mean, how many members they are, the kind of music they sing, and try to put into words just how beautiful their singing
is. Sure.
They are
a 6-member group, so it's a very small chamber choir, and they sing mostly very early Renaissance music, so a lot of English, Taverner and Bird, but also Estonian folk songs and folk hymns and runic hymns. So they bring a lot of their musical tradition to their programs. And you know, I'm pretty sure that everybody who's at the concert Sunday, this will be the first time they've ever heard any of this music before. So, you know, because we're not so knowledgeable about their traditions. So this will be a great introduction to all of us in the audience to that style of music.
Right. And I suppose it's an interesting challenge for them to acclimate themselves to this particular performance space and to get comfortable.
Sure.
And it's not going to be quite the cathedrals
that they're typically singing in,
and yet it's a beautiful space.
It should sound pretty good. You're right, it won't be as ringing as a cathedral might be, but I think it'll be a nice setting for that style of music.
Well, here is a little sample of the singing of Ensemble Heinevanker from Estonia, who will be performing at First United Methodist Church this Sunday afternoon at 3:00. Sagan Sidra little sample of the Heinevanker vocal ensemble from Estonia.
Yes.
Really beautiful, hauntingly beautiful and different. It's very different. They have their own sound.
We don't have a lot of early music on our series, and so this is a great opportunity for us to do that.
Very nice. So again, that's 3 o'clock this Sunday afternoon, the Heinevanker Vocal Ensemble from Estonia. And Jessica, let's talk through some of what the other offerings of this season of fine arts. At first, you have a pianist coming in November 18th, but not just a pianist.
No. And, you know, so our first group is coming from halfway across the world, and this group, and then in November, we're having Brian Harris from our very own backyard. And so many of our fine arts friends will know Brian. He plays piano every year on our jazz concert that always closes out our season, and he is just fantastic. So he's doing a program on November 18 called One Piano, One Voice. And he's a classically trained pianist, but a lot of people will know him for his Simply Elton show. He does a Elton John tribute show, and he does the whole thing. He dresses up. He's got the glasses. He's got the hats. He does the whole show. And so he'll be doing everything in this program, from Gershwin to some of his own compositions, and maybe even a little Elton John as well. So it's going to be, you know, not only classical, but some pop music for us too. So that'll be great. And people know him, and you know that he's just a fantastic performer.
Great. So that's November 18th. Yep. Jazz pianist Brian Harris. I know something about the sing-along Messiah that's back on December 16th, and that will be lots of fun, and we hope that Mother Nature cooperates.
Absolutely. That's always the unknown in the winter concerts. Will there be a snowstorm or not?
Yeah.
So we're gonna say no. It's going to be perfect, and it'll be beautiful and Christmassy, and we'll have our wonderful Messiah sing-along. That it's our 14th year, if you can believe it.
Wow.
So I know.
And we should probably remind people that people are welcome to come and sing, and you need not own your own score. We have plenty of copies of Messiah for you to borrow, and we get you seated with the sopranos or the altos or the tenors or the basses, whatever is your vocal part, and away we go.
Yes, or if you don't sing and that scares you, then you don't have to sing. You can just come and enjoy the music, and there's no requirement that you sing, but there's the requirement that you be there and enjoy.
There you go. And you were saying you already have the orchestra all hired and ready to go.
We have a 30-piece orchestra and soloists, so it's a beautiful, beautiful evening, and it's a wonderful favorite of all of the orchestra members. Every email I got said, oh, I'm so excited to come back. Yay, Messiah. So
yay.
It's exciting.
Great. On January 20th, something called the Wisconsin Wind Orchestra. I am not acquainted with this group.
Yeah, the Wisconsin Wind Orchestra, and they've actually been around for over 20 years, and they are a professional small chamber orchestra of just winds, and they've done recordings and concerts in Europe and in this area as well. But they're doing a really interesting program called On the Shoulders of Giants, and they're playing works that were inspired by other works of music. So they'll play the work that was inspired by, and then the work that did the inspiring. So I think that's an interesting...
That's terrific.
Yeah, really, really neat. So something inspired by Mozart and something inspired by Haydn. So that'll be a nice concert. They've been on our program before. It's just been several years since, so that'll be nice to have them back.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, I certainly know the name of the person on February 24th, namely Dr. Wael Farouk from Carthage.
We're very excited, and I know that a lot of people were at the Kenosha Symphony concert last weekend and heard him play Rachmaninoff. I was playing in the orchestra, and it was just amazing and phenomenal. And so we're so excited to have, again, someone who's right here in our backyard, Dr. Farouk, come, and he's going to be doing a program of all Chopin, and we're really looking forward to that he gets to play our piano, and it's exciting.
He's an incredible performer and musician, and that is exciting indeed. And then, as is often the case, the season finishes out with jazz.
That's right. This year we're focusing on a tribute to Cannonball Adderley, who's a famous saxophonist. And some people called him sort of the person who took over the mantle from Charlie Parker. So really famous, and he'll be our focus in May, on May 5. And again, we're bringing back band leader Mike Gudbauer and all of his friends who make up our fabulous fine arts jazz ensemble. And they always just close out the season in the most fun fashion.
And it just wouldn't be fine arts at first without it.
No.
Yes. So I think one thing we have not maybe yet reiterated, and people who've gone to this before are aware of the fact, but it bears repeating, that there is no admission charge
for these
performances.
No. All of our concerts are completely free. We do ask for a donation. At some point during the program, we'll have the ushers come out and we take an offering. But of course, that is all voluntary, and there's no charge. But we do appreciate whatever you'd like to toss in the basket, and then we'll use that directly to support our program.
Right. So it's a terrific offering that First United Methodist Church makes to the community, and you certainly do a great service by offering such a terrific array of first-rate musicians. And we want to reiterate how the series begins again this Sunday afternoon.
Sure. It begins this Sunday with the choir Heinevanker, and the concert begins at 3 o'clock, and they do Renaissance and early choral music, very small ensemble, and it should be a wonderful start to our season.
Oh, should be just absolutely perfect. So Jessica DeBoer is the person behind the scenes who makes all of this happen in such spectacular fashion. Jessica, great to have you here, and we look forward to crossing paths with you time and time again during this season of Fine Arts at First at First United Methodist Church. That's at the corner of Sheridan Road and 60th
That's
Street.
Correct.
For anybody who has not yet been there. And we hope that you'll seek out any or all of these musical offerings, beginning with the concert this Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Here's part 2, 3, and 4 of this busy morning show on WGTD. And for this portion of WGTD's morning show, I'm glad to be in the office of Doug Instanis, managing artistic director at the Racine Theater Guild, but Doug isn't here. We have taken over his office, we meaning me, and Jim Fletcher, who is the guest director of the Racine Theater Guild's next production, which opens tonight. And it is a play called Lombardi. And anybody in the state of Wisconsin certainly knows who this play is about, namely Vince Lombardi, the legendary coach of the Green Bay Packers. This is a play that I saw at the Milwaukee Rep a few years ago, and I absolutely loved it. And so I am very excited indeed that this comes to the stage of the Racine Theater Guild. And I appreciate Jim Fletcher at the end of a long night of rehearsal here at the Guild taking a few moments to talk with me for the morning show before he heads back home to Milwaukee. Jim Fletcher, we welcome you to the morning show.
Nice to be here.
Since this is your first visit to the morning show, and because you're relatively new to the Guild, our listeners would probably appreciate just a brief word about who you are and where you come from. I've already mentioned that your base of operation is Milwaukee right now, but what else do we need to know about you?
I'm a theater professional that lives in Milwaukee. I'm an actor, a director, a fight choreographer. I have my own theater company. I'm a playwright. I teach theater. So a little bit of everything, and I've been back here since 98. I'm from Milwaukee, the area originally, moved out to Los Angeles for a couple of years and moved back in 98.
Very good. What is your own theater company?
It's the Bunny Gumbo Theater Company. So we've been in existence for 18 years now.
Wow. And what kinds of things do you do?
Mostly we do something called combat theater, which are plays that are written, directed, and acted all within 24 hours.
You mean they're created in that span of time?
They are. 8 plays each night. So we do it on a Friday night, and then we turn around, and with less time and less sleep, we do it again for the next night.
Wow. Very intriguing. That sounds like something worth checking out. Where are those performances?
We perform at the Youth Arts Center at First Stages Place, MIAC, the Milwaukee Youth Arts Center.
Wow. Very good. And you are now on your third stint as a guest director here at the Racine Theater Guild. I imagine it's an interesting challenge and pleasure to step into another theater and into kind of a different scenario.
Sure. Well, yeah, it's always any play that's episodic in nature like this is always a challenge. And all 3 plays that I've directed here have been like that. The first one in particular, Be My Baby, had something like 27, 30 different scenes that we had to get on and off. But the crew here is great. They're always very helpful, and we always manage to get there by opening night.
Right. And I'm sure you are probably like most guest directors who appreciate the fact that this is such a high-quality facility, first of all, and then, like you said, also some really good people who know what they're doing.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. I think people are going to be thrilled when they see, everything about the show, but the actors in particular are phenomenal.
Very good. So
When this invitation came to you, was it specifically to see if you wanted to direct Lombardi, or was it just a matter of we need a bunch of guest directors and then you got slotted in here?
No, Doug asked me to direct this. He knew that I had been in Lombardi when I was up at Peninsula Players in Door County. Oh. So I played Jim Taylor. He knew that. He knew I knew the play well, and he also had seen my work here a couple of times. So he slotted me in for this one.
Wow. So was that performance with Peninsula Players your initial encounter with this play?
With this play, yes. Absolutely.
Tell our listeners, beyond the obvious, that it has something to do with legendary coach Vince Lombardi. Otherwise, how does this play handle this towering figure? How does it go about bringing him to life?
I think the playwright was very smart with the way he tackled this play. I mean, he could have written a play about the championship years and all the success and make it all about the football team, and he didn't do that at all. It has very little to do with football. It's about Lombardi's relationship with his players, in particular, particularly his family, his wife, Marie, in particular. And really, you know, a great man, but a flawed man, and the play doesn't shy away from that. And it's, you know, you're going to be surprised at how much you see takes place in the Lombardi household as opposed to on the football field.
Interesting. When you say that it doesn't shy away from his flaws, can you be maybe specific with a couple of the flaws which are brought to light here?
Yeah, I think he was very myopic, so he was just focused on what was right in front of him, and sometimes to the detriment of his family. Hmm. I think he lost touch with his son there for a while, and even his daughter. Marie, I think, ended up being a fairly unhappy person. I think they drank too much, everything to excess. But I think he was so driven that he couldn't see anything else, including taking care of his health. If he had paid attention to that, they might have caught what killed him eventually.
Interesting. We do meet some players. How many players are part of this cast?
Three players. We meet Paul Horning, Jim Taylor, and Dave Robinson. And when I met the playwright years ago, I asked him why those players. And he said, well, you know, Paul Horning was, you know, the funny, happy-go-lucky guy that got into trouble. And Jim Taylor was the one that butted heads with everyone. And then he particularly wanted to focus on a black player because that was very important to Lombardi, to make sure that all his players were treated the same. And I asked him, why not Bart Starr? And he said, you have nothing to write about. I mean, he was such a great player, but, you know, he wasn't getting into trouble. He wasn't doing that. So as a character in a play, he wasn't as interesting as these three.
Right. When we see the players, do we ever see them as players? I mean, literally in uniform and on the field, so to speak, or is this pretty much confined to action and conversations off the field?
No, we do get them. We get them on the practice field a few times, and at the end, we get them on the field in full regalia, all their uniforms and everything else.
Very good. So for someone who is a diehard Green Bay Packer fan, will this play in any way be perhaps kind of disconcerting in that they might go to it thinking it will be nothing but a unalterated celebration of this wonderful man and the wonderful things he did? And it sounds like it's a more complicated picture.
It is, but I think they'll eat it up. You know, a lot of the things you hear Vince say, like, you know, as he's taking us through the final game, are images and sounds that we've all heard for years and years and years. We've also, our set designer did a great job as well with, he's put in these panels at the back that can open up and close, and throughout the play we have projections of the players, the old players, and scenes from Green Bay that are up there. So I think people will eat it up.
Very good. So we are actually recording this interview Tuesday night. Mm-hmm. It's airing Friday morning, the morning of opening night at the Guild. So at this point in the final week, what are the things that you and your cast and crew are busiest with in terms of getting this ready to open?
Well, you're in a rehearsal hall for most of the rehearsal process, and it's not until that last week that you get in the space itself. So you're always having to make adjustments. Oh, I thought I could make this entrance here. It takes too long to get over here. We have to adjust that. But primarily, this is the time for the crew that's running the show, the stage manager and the whiteboard operator and the soundboard operator. They haven't gotten the rehearsal, so it's time for them to get in, get their timing down, get the props down, how the set pieces will move on and off. So that's what we're dealing with now, and it's really coming together.
Very good. Anybody you want to talk about in terms of the cast? How big a cast, by the way, is it?
It's six people. It's the three football players. There's Vince Lombardi, his wife Marie, and a fictional reporter named Michael
McCormick.
Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Just ran away from me there. They're all doing great. Rich, who is playing Vince Lombardi, has taken great care. He looks like Vince Lombardi. He's really gone out of his way. They're all doing a great job. In particular, though, Mel has really impressed me as Marie Lombardi. She's just heartbreaking when you watch her and what she's going through, and more vital to the play than I think people would think she is. Mm. So I think they're going to eat her up.
So how much is this very much kind of heavy drama versus dashes of comedy? I mean, just how textured a play is this?
It's textured, but there's a lot of humor in it. There really is. Even when people are butting heads in it, there's a lot of humor. So I wouldn't worry about that.
Right. That's my recollection. Again, it's been several years since I've seen it, but I remember that the play was really quite entertaining and also a wonderful mix of poignant and funny and interesting and energetic. And it also feels like a play, my recollection is, that's beautifully paced.
Yes.
So they're not kind of dry patches where you're kind of waiting for something else to happen. It's put together well. So the play runs for three weekends, and it sounds like, because it's a relatively small cast, each of them plays a pretty significant role. So this is, I should think, a taxing run.
I hope it's not too taxing. I mean, I think the rehearsal process has been more taxing than the play will be, and I think they're anxious to get out in front of an audience. We had a crew of about 20 here last night, and they were reacting and laughing, and that just feeds the actors on stage. So once we start getting that in there, I think it's going to be cake from there on out.
Absolutely. Lombardi opens tonight at the Racine Theatre Guild, and the guest director, Jim Fletcher. Jim Fletcher, thanks for making time for this. Best wishes to you and your cast and crew for Lombardi.
Thank you.
By the way, during the third and final weekend of performances of Lombardi at the Guild, that would be the first weekend in November, the Racine Theatre Guild is thrilled and honored to be welcoming as a very special guest David Robinson, legendary linebacker, former Green Bay Packer, who is actually one of three actual former Green Bay Packers depicted in the play Lombardi. Again, David Robinson will be a special guest of the Guild the first weekend in November. If you would like ticket information about Lombardi, you can call 633-4218. That's area code 262-633-4218. Or you can go to the Guild's website, which is racinetheater.org. The play Lombardi is by award-winning playwright and screenwriter Eric Simonson, who is currently serving as playwright-in-residence at Carthage College. Eric Simonson was commissioned by Carthage's New Play Initiative to pen a new work to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the New Play Initiative. And that new play, Up and Away, will receive its world premiere at Carthage College on the 9th of November. You're listening to the Friday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. In this next segment, we want to remind you about a production that opened last weekend at the University of Wisconsin Parkside, a performance of Orson Welles' classic War of the Worlds, loosely based on the famous novel of H.G. Wells of the same name. I had the opportunity last week of meeting for the first time Fabrice Comte-Williamson, a brand new member of the theater faculty at Parkside and the director of War of the Worlds. We talked, among other things, about the matter of sound effects.
So everybody has been working with random props, trying to make the sound effects that are needed in the play. So you get to see Foley techniques that are actually Foley techniques of the period, using pieces of metal, pieces of different objects to create the sounds that we're looking for, and some things that are maybe a little bit modern when it comes to the technology, maybe using our sound system to insert the music that in the interludes that are in the play. So there's a mix of the two. The great fun of going to see War of the Worlds is that you get to see these actor, technician, Foley artists play around with very unusual objects to create maybe people walking down the streets, birds eating aliens, all kinds of things like that.
And what kind of challenge has this posed for you as director beyond, I think, the more obvious elements of how do we make this sound effect and kind of technically how do we put it all together? In terms of working with the actors, how does this feel different from previous projects involving a fully staged play in terms of working with the actors in their actual performances?
So one of the challenge for an actor here is that they're playing two characters. So they're playing the actor recording the play, and then they have to investigate what the characters in the story are and bring those to life. So there's multiple layers, and that for a young actor sometimes can be challenging to maintain the truth of the character throughout when they have to go back and forth between playing an alien, playing a scientist, playing themselves as the recording artist. So there, that was definitely a challenge and one that was met very nicely by the cast. So we're excited to show our work.
We're talking with Fabrice Comte-Williamson, who is from the theater department at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, brand new to the faculty, about their radio production of War of the Worlds, running for two consecutive weekends at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. And what an interesting coincidence that Kenosha's community theater, the Lakeside Players, is also doing radio theater the same two weekends. And that says something about the renaissance of radio drama, that this is something that is happening more and more. Why do you think that is? And for instance, aside from the 80th anniversary, which is a wonderful reason to do War of the Worlds, why does it make sense for a university theater department or a community theater for that matter to explore radio drama?
Well, part of it is it was kind of a forbidden art form that was so popular in the mid-20th century and then sort of disappeared. And there's an interest in exploring the wealth of scripts and the cultural impact of these plays that came. I mean, they're the equivalent of what today would be a hit series that someone might watch on TV. So there's great value in the scripts themselves. They're very interesting. They're written by great professionals. Sometimes people like Orson Welles, who was a stage actor and then was working on the series with Mercury Theater to do these radio plays, and then became, of course, a big movie persona. So these very talented people working on these plays, and these plays have been forgotten. So that's an aspect of it I think is very valuable to bring back to the community, is sort of reintroduce people who may never have listened to a radio play to this tradition.
Fantastic. So let's find out a little bit about you personally, about your life's journey ahead of coming to the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. First of all, where are you from originally? I'm guessing not Arkansas.
Not Arkansas, no. I'm from southern France, where I grew up and went to school. And when I was 20 years old, I was dedicated to finding a program abroad. I wanted to go study abroad. That was very important to me.
And study theater, I assume?
Study theater. And I decided to look at different options. And for a variety of reasons, I ended up in the U.S. at the University of Oklahoma in Norman. And so...
right next to Arkansas.
That's right. That made me smile when you said that. And so I got to study there, and I worked and taught in Oklahoma, directed professionally there, and got my MFA, my PhD at OU. So I've been in Oklahoma for a while. And I was looking at relocating towards a bigger theater scene. So I had heard about Parkside. And I was really excited about the program here. I know it's a small world. People know each other,
sure.
And collaborate on different projects across the country. And so when there was an opportunity to come to Parkside, I jumped on it and hoped for the best, and it all happened.
Fantastic. Well, you're certainly stepping into a very fine tradition there, and you're part of a very fine faculty as well. If we can just circle back to France for a moment, I would just be curious to know, as a young person growing up, when theater became important to you, and in the community where you were growing up, I don't know if it was a small town or a bigger city or what, but what kind of opportunities were there for you to explore this interest?
I really didn't get into theater until pretty late. I went to a friend of mine wanted to go to a performing arts high school, and you had to apply. It was this kind of school program, and I just really wanted to go with my friend. So I applied for the theater program, and I really had not done a lot of theater before that, just really a couple of little projects, you know. And so I decided to go there, and I just fell in love with the art form in this performing arts high school, which is in Cannes in southern France, where the film festival takes place. And so I studied there, and then I caught the bug, and I was just wanting to pursue that as a career. Yeah.
Now, did this displace something else that had occupied your energy and attention before that? Or at that point in time, were you still trying to figure out, what am I interested in?
Well, I think my parents would say they wanted me to become a medical doctor. So, and that was the track I was on, really. But I became a different kind of doctor.
Yeah, I guess so. Doctoring the soul.
That's right, exactly.
Yes. Were your aspirations to act, or were they to direct, or both, or neither? At least early on, as the bug bit you, what did you foresee for yourself?
I think at the beginning, most people want to be an actor. You know, that's like the sexy part of making theater, and the one that people know the most about. So I was an actor. I was trained as an actor for many years. I did small film roles. I did some commercial work. I did some stage work, which is my favorite. And then I discovered directing partly. That was always something that I was interested in, but partly because when I came to the U.S., there's a language barrier for acting. And, you know, not a lot of roles for French accent, actors with French accents. So I had to look into other places where I could make art. And one of them was directing, and I decided to pursue my studies in directing. And I continue to act once in a while when the right role is available and I have the time, but I think directing is where my heart is today.
Huh, very good. And it has felt fairly natural to you right from the start? I mean, you feel like you had a natural affinity for it, or is this something where you had to do a lot of work, in a sense, to become a director or become comfortable with the role?
I would say it felt pretty natural from the beginning. Just it's a place where I enjoy collaborating with others and bringing other people's talent together. And so I really like that aspect, is letting other collaborators, which could be the cast or designers, do their best and help them do their best. So I love that role for the director. And also being able to bring a vision to a particular project and lead a group of artists towards, you know, a unified project. That's very exciting. So I don't think it's ever been a lot of work. The process has not been a lot of work. Been very natural. However, it is a lot of work to be a director. There's a lot of things that you need to do and prepare in order to support everyone else in the team.
So what are your duties at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside aside from directing War of the Worlds? Or is that all they're making you do? You get to sit around there?
I wish, Greg. No, I got to do a lot of really fun stuff. I got to teach many classes in performance and directing and theater history. I consider myself a theater generalist, and I like being able to approach theater from various angles. So that's part of what I do, is teach at Parkside and, of course, direct regularly in the season. And
will this be the only fully staged production that you will direct this school year?
Yes. So this year, this will be my only production at Parkside. And then in the spring, I am doing a stage reading of a play called My Barking Dog. It's a contemporary play, part of the Fresh Ink initiative, yes, where we have the various new plays coming to the table. So
that's a fantastic series. I thoroughly applaud it. For those listeners who've never encountered this, the Fresh Ink series involves very new plays, and in many cases plays that I think, for various reasons, Parkside might not be in a position to fully stage. And
correct,
I think in some cases it's even plays that are so new that maybe even the rights aren't available to fully stage them, but they can be publicly read and I've experienced several of those performances and always enjoyed them. It's often groundbreaking theater and something very, 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 very new. So what are your impressions of Parkside in terms of your colleagues and the students that you're working with?
Well, I've been very impressed by everyone I've been interacting with. It's a great school. I think the theater program is really excellent and deserves its status as a signature program of the university. It is also wonderfully located between Milwaukee and Chicago, so a lot of professional theater around for the students to get internship and professional work before they even finish their studies. And I think that's a winning aspect of the program. One of the reasons I chose to come to Parkside was their connection with the professional scene. And I look forward to being a part of the program as it continues to grow.
Fabrice Comte-Williamson, a brand new member of the theater faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside, is the director of their production of War of the Worlds. It opened last weekend, but it's running this weekend as well. And you can get more information at uwp.edu/tickets. To finish out today's morning show, we're going to be hearing more about the Lakeside Players' double bill, which opened last weekend, of two famous radio plays, The Hitchhiker and Sorry Wrong Number. Joining me to talk about the double bill was director Carl Yeager and actors Amy Louise and Jay Rattle. Phil Yeager, you were saying also that this is not quite straight radio drama. I mean, it does not quite play out the way, for instance, these would have been performed once upon a time. You've injected some sort of full-scale right. theatrical elements into it.
Right, because, I mean, of course, we're performing for a live audience that comes into the theater to see it mm-hmm. performed, and you want to give them some visual images that I don't believe, you know, back in the 40s, the live performances that were done were done for, you know, visual effects. They were more, it's all for the people listening in the country. So I asked people to find some costumes that were appropriate for their characters, which they all have done very well. And then, like Jay said, he in particular, because his figure doesn't have a lot to say. I should point out that they're both thrillers, but The Hitchhiker is sort of a tale of the supernatural. It's the more like a ghost story. And so I thought it would be an effective visual for the audience to see this man and maybe sense what the man Adams, who's being played by a wonderful actor, by the way, he couldn't be here this morning, Tony Lasaldi.
Oh yeah,
I think I pronounced Lasaldi. That correct.
Yep. Yep.
Say it again.
Lasaldi. Yeah.
Lasaldi.
He's a treasure. He's a wonderful
He's a treasure, and you know his dilemma. You know he starts telling his story. He is going on this 8-day journey from New York to Los Angeles. His mother doesn't want him to go, but you know he's bound and determined, and we're sort of in the dark for most of the play exactly what's happening to him, because it sounds like he could be hallucinating. He could be, you know, maybe he's losing his mind. We don't know until the final few moments of the play, I think, which is a wonderful reveal when we find out the
wow.
truth.
Very good.
Yeah.
Jay Rattle, you are not only the hitchhiker, but you are playing actually several different roles.
Yes.
I don't know that we need the whole list, but I wonder if I think it's more interesting to just hear about what the challenge is within the space of a single evening to be undertaking various roles, and what kind of a special challenge it is when we're talking about a format like a radio play.
Sure. In radio plays, your voice is your main tool. Mm-hmm. Although your body and your gestures and for a live audience play into that as well. But the biggest challenge is to find a voice for the different characters and making sure that those voices are different and unique to that particular character. As an example, the character of Adams comes to this restaurant,
yes.
and he wakes up the proprietor in the middle of the night because he wants a cup of coffee, and he thinks because, you know, he sees this other character throughout the country that it's going to help him to take a break from driving. But so you create kind of a unique character by using different inflections, different tones of your voice, and sometimes even putting a few gestures into the mix. Because most of the time, the characters, especially in Sorry Wrong Number, are on a phone, and they're looking directly out to the audience, where my characters, a number of them, especially the hitchhiker, interacts with Tony's character of Adams. And I, as the old man in the restaurant, too, I interact with Tony and look at Tony because, you know, you're talking directly to the other character.
Interesting.
And Amy right. Louise is also... plays his wife in that brief scene. It's a very interesting moment when you know he stops at this place for help and asks for
a cup of coffee
and the response he gets from both of them is a brief.
Drunk. It's fun to act with your voice.
Right.
Yes,
just
right,
truly
yes.
act with your voice. And I've been a mimic since I was a little girl, you know. So I'm basically it's fun because I'm just doing what I used to do when I was little, you know.
Just for fun.
It's a playground.
Right.
So I get to go from the very elegant Mrs. Stevenson to Henry. What's going on, Henry? You know, you get to do these different voices. You get to go from Agnes to Marjorie Main, you know, for anybody who doesn't know who Marjorie Main is. But
Ma and Pa Kettle.
Right.
So you've done radio performances, radio theater
yes.
performances as
yes.
well.
Yes, we've all, for a whole decade, I believe, have been
yes.
involved with,
right,
RG,
with RG
Radio
production.
Girl.
And we're sort of, this is, I should mention that also, that RG... is working with us in conjunction with the Lakeside Players production. Three of their major players that help behind the scenes, Ed Godula, Candy Kay, and Rick Haggerty, all have helped us immensely to put this show together. So it's a Lakeside Player production with the assist from RG.
Yeah, we're very grateful for their help. They just add so much. When we did our tech rehearsals this week, we finally had the sound effects and the music, and it just, as an actor or actress, it just really boosts everything up.
Right,
you know, and
exactly.
It really, brings it up and out.
Sure. I should think, too, I mean, I've the stage of the Rhodey Opera House is a modest space, I mean, in terms of just sheer amount of space. And yet, through great ingenuity, the Lakeside Players have mounted things like The Wizard of Oz and Into the Woods and other works that you might not imagine could be effectively done on such a small space. But on the other hand, it seems like something like this is absolutely perfect for that space because you don't need a lot of space to create wonderful radio drama.
It makes it more intimate for the audience as well as the actors.
Yeah.
Yes, we're doing this in the smaller theater, by the way.
The
Black Box Theater, and that's more conducive to this kind of drama. We did Laramie Project there earlier this year, and this was, I think, the ideal. In fact, RG did some productions there about 7 or 8 years ago, maybe before Amy Louise and Jay were involved. But we did some shows there, and I think it works really well. You know, there's just a nice venue for radio shows to be done in.
The Lakeside Players' double bill of Sorry Wrong Number and The Hitchhiker continues this weekend at the Rhodey Opera House in downtown Kenosha. And you can go to their website, rhodeycenter.org, for more information, or call 657-PLAY, 657-7529. My thanks to Carl Yeager, Amy Louise, and Jay Rattle for being part of the morning show here on WGTD.